It's The Takeaway, and I'm Lizzie O'Leary, host of the podcast What Next TBD from Slate. I'm in for Tanzina Vega, who's on maternity leave. Thank you so much for joining us on this Wednesday. We've been talking a lot on this show about state and local leaders, those who've been leading the charge against COVID-19 against the backdrop of a disorganized and uneven federal response. And we've been hearing directly from governors and mayors across the country. Today, we head to San Francisco, where Mayor London Breed has been met with praise for early interventions against the spread of COVID-19, as well as criticism for her handling of the virus among the city's large homeless population. Mayor Breed joins us now to talk about all of this. Welcome to the show.
Of course. Thank you.
Before we get too deep into this, how are you holding up?
Well, I'm surviving. It's definitely been very challenging not to resume my normal life, but everyone's in the same boat. And ultimately, this is really about trying to keep everyone safe.
Your city was one of the first big cities in the U.S. to take action against the coronavirus pretty early, March 16th. Tell me about why.
Well, we declared a state of emergency on February 25th of this year when we had not one case diagnosed, but we knew it wasn't a matter of if, it was a matter of when, and we had to be prepared. And so as we started to ramp up and communicate to the public what was going on, we started to eliminate large-scale events and people continued to gather. And we were concerned about what that would mean if we continued to allow that to occur. So I think part of the reason why the decision was made is because we did a lot of work ahead of time to get people prepared for what we felt was the inevitable. And that is ultimately what we had to do on March 16th and to ask everyone to remain at home, if at all possible, unless you're an essential worker for the city. So I think by the time we did that, especially because we did the state of emergency in February and we were communicating with the public on a regular basis about preparing and getting medications, and in some cases asking our elderly residents and those with disabilities and underlying health conditions to stay at home, people were ready when it hit.
You did get some pushback. Did you ever second guess yourself?
I definitely got some pushback, and I didn't second guess the need to do the decision because I knew what was at stake, and there was no question, but I did feel really bad for our small businesses, for our hotels and our restaurants, and the people that I knew would financially suffer as a result of this. I knew that this was going to have a devastating impact on our economy. Chinatown was already feeling the impacts because people were making certain assumptions because of xenophobia and a number of other challenges with our Chinese community. And so definitely I felt, you know, sadness about what I knew I had to do, but there was never even a question of whether or not I had to do it. Public health was at stake.
San Francisco is a city that is used to earthquakes and preparing for them. I guess I wonder if people there are maybe more primed to listen to public officials than you might have in a city that's not used to disasters.
Well, I think so, because we're a major city and we talk about preparedness, resiliency. We have a outreach team of people who we go and we have block parties and we talk about earthquakes. We talk about things that could potentially happen where we would need to survive on our own. We have created information about the things you need to keep at home, 72sf.org, which is a list of items that you should have just in case there's an earthquake. And so I think that might be part of it, that we are always thinking that it's not a matter of if, but it's a matter of when an earthquake might strike or when we might be the victims of a terrorist attack or what have you. These are simulations that we've practiced in our Department of Emergency Management. So we have systems in place like the wildfires and the air quality and the heat waves and other things that have occurred in the city where we've had to make certain adjustments. But ultimately, I think what has been extremely helpful is communicating from day one with the public about exactly what is going on when you have the facts. And I think that people, although they may not be happy about it or they may have some certain disagreements, they comply because they know that it's necessary. So I think that part of it is, yes, our history of earthquakes and other challenges, but also the communication strategy around communicating with the public early on about what's happening really, I think, had a lot to do with helping them get prepared for where we are now.
You've just announced that the city is going to start closing some streets to cars to encourage social distancing. Do you think that could make things harder for essential workers, especially since mass transit options in the city have been cut back? And I guess, how do you account for that? People still do need to get around if they're essential.
Listen, I think part of the thing here is this is like nothing we've ever experienced before. And ultimately, we want to protect public health, but we also want to protect mental health and public safety. And part of what we want people to do is, of course, stay indoors, but people need fresh air and they need to get out. And we want to make sure that they're safe in doing so. And so the goal is to try this out, to see how it works, and to make the necessary adjustments if there are challenges. Because at this point, you know, with the weather changing, people are going to be outside. And we want to make sure that there's room for people to distance themselves from one another safely. And so that's really what this is all about. And if we see that there are challenges, we will make adjustments.
I want to look at homelessness in your city, a big issue in San Francisco. At least 106 people, including 10 staff, got coronavirus in San Francisco's biggest shelter. And the spread of COVID has been a big problem across the homeless population. There were warnings before things got bad. Could you have done more to stop the spread?
I think that you could always do more to stop the spread of the virus. But the challenge that we run into is this is, you know, in the age of social distancing, where we have people who are not coming to work because they have to take care of their children or they have to take care of an aging parent, or they're just fearful of what might occur, especially with a very challenging population to begin with. We've actually in San Francisco housed almost 1,000 people in hotel rooms so far. We only have 5% of the homeless population in the state of California. But of the hotel rooms that we've been able to acquire, we have basically housed 25% of the homeless population that has been housed so far in this entire state. And so I think that says a lot about the system we put in place. But more importantly, the challenges of mental illness and substance use disorder don't just go away because there's a pandemic. These are people who, in some cases, the challenges we've run into in these shelters, not complying with the social distancing, even after we've helped to thin out the shelters so that there's more room, wearing a mask and wearing the gloves with the things that we provided, the hand sanitizer. We have regular cleanings. I invested early on $5 million into cleaning the shelters on a regular basis. And I think the challenges and where the staff even was frustrated in some instances, they're serving food to folks, they're helping people, they're social workers, but they're asking people to comply with something that doesn't always work with this population. And so I think that we're not taking into account the difficulties there and the difficulties in logistics in not only moving people to hotel locations, but trying to keep them there and trying to make sure that we increase our capacity by bringing in city workforce. Disaster service workers are, every city employee is a disaster service worker. And when we make those calls, we have over 30% of our city workforce saying no, because they're not necessarily comfortable with those jobs or for the other reasons I mentioned about taking care of their kids or a family member at home and being concerned about their health and well-being. And so this is the age of social distancing. And I think that it's a lot more challenging, not just for San Francisco, but for anyone with a large homeless population. So to expect us to all of a sudden open up every hotel room and have the ability to take care and house this group of people and things would get better is not necessarily realistic.
Why not do universal testing in the shelters, though? That's something that one of the San Francisco supervisors has suggested as a way to have a broader sense of where the virus stands in that population.
Again, not realistic. We are already experiencing a shortage with testing where, unfortunately, we are in a position where we can only test people who exhibit symptoms. And we are doing contact tracing so that we can start to test more people like we did with the shelter in this case. We brought in an operation to actually test people in this shelter, but What we had also were people who, after we asked them to stay and wait for the results, they left the shelter. And the fact is, even if we test everyone, then the next day, depending on what kind of contact they've had with someone, they could get the coronavirus right away. That doesn't solve the problem. Again, we're talking about a population in many instances that are not following the directions that we're giving them in order to keep them safe and the staff that's trying to serve them safe. So it's just not realistic. It sounds good, and wouldn't we want everyone to be tested? But the shortages that not only exist in San Francisco, but in the entire United States is not something that's necessarily within our control.
Yeah, California has been sort of lagging behind a lot of other states when it comes to testing, according to data from the COVID Tracking Project. Do you know why that is?
I don't completely understand why we have... ordered, I think maybe has something to do with everybody in the U.S. is ordering the same thing. We're all looking for ventilators. We're all looking for swabs. We can run the test easily. We have the capacity to run a number of tests, but there's the swabs that are challenging to access. And I think that, you know, the challenges with what we're experiencing is not unique to San Francisco. It's happening all over the country. And the lack of coordination from the federal government to help assist cities, especially large cities that experience these challenges, is really what I think one of the problems is with in terms of access to these tests. But I also want to be clear that we've come a long way. We are able to test anyone who exhibits symptoms right away and provide test results within a day or two. We've come a long way from where we were before, where we hardly had access to anything. And we are doing everything we can to make sure that that's taken place. And now with contact tracing, our goal is to test people who don't exhibit symptoms, but who have had some level of contact with a person who has tested positive. That's going to be important as we look at reopening cities and trying to basically keep a lid on this virus. But we also definitely need more test kits.
Speaking of the future, San Francisco is expected to face a $1.7 billion budget shortfall because of COVID-19, which means you're going to have some very tough choices facing you. How will you address those revenue losses in the budget?
Well, a few weeks ago, I announced an economic recovery task force, which involves city elected officials, labor, the business community, and others to begin the process of preparing for what happens after we start to gradually reopen our doors. Because, for example, when we think about our restaurants and what might happen, new guidelines that may be implemented, what will that mean for their ability to pay their rent, to pay their staff, to bring back all their staff, and also their overall overhead? Is it going to be more expensive for them to do business? And what do we need to do as a city to support that? And what does that mean to the revenue that we generate? And also tourism, which is a huge industry in our city. What does this mean for the revenue that we're able to generate? We have to start planning for that sooner rather than later. And we're going to have to, unfortunately, make some hard choices in this process, because this is like nothing we've ever experienced before. But again, it's not unique to San Francisco. The entire economy in the United States is going to be tremendously impacted as a result of this virus. Not to mention the dollars that we won't be reimbursed for from the federal government for all the money that we're already spending for our business community, but also in order to maintain and manage this pandemic. The cost of what we're spending for PPE and all of those other things play a role into the challenges that I know we're going to face. But I also am hopeful about the future, and we're going to have to make some adjustments so that we are able to bring our economy back. And it's going to take a lot of patience. It's going to be a lot of heartache, and it's going to take some time.
Finally, Mayor Breed, you launched the city's first Office of Racial Equity last year. And looking at the data, we can see 25% of positive cases in San Francisco are among Latinos, though they make up only 15% of the San Francisco population. I wonder how you plan to use that office to address some of the COVID-19 related inequities that we're starting to see across your city and across the country.
Well, I think that part of what's important is that from the day one, our Emergency Operations Center has incorporated the Office of Racial Equity into the decisions that we made for outreach to communities that usually are disenfranchised. And so part of what we are doing is continuing to work with these communities to encourage them to get testing. And also, we have to remember that in many cases, not only are these folks serving as essential workers, but in some cases, they have to be able to find work in order to take care of their families, or they're living in congregate living settings, or they're living in households with a large number of people. And so we see that the inequities that exist in our society, where, you know, oftentimes the poor are more impacted in a negative way, especially when there's a pandemic. This is what we're seeing play itself out, not just in San Francisco, again, but all over the country. And part of what we have to continue to do, and what I'm proud that we are doing with our Office of Racial Equity and the Human Rights Commission, is our deliberate investment in providing food, in providing masks, in providing health care, free testing, whether you have health care or not, and providing support to people who do not have health care, and reaching out to those communities and providing hotel rooms in order to make sure that, for example, if you're in a congregate living and no one else tests positive but you test positive, we can move you into a room and make sure that you don't infect your other family members. So there are a number of things that we're doing here in the city in order to address the inequities that exist, and we're going to keep doing it.
Mayor Breed, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
London Breed is the mayor of San Francisco, California. There's more of our conversation up at thetakeaway.org, and we're going to continue speaking with mayors and governors across the U.S. about their approaches to this pandemic. You can find all those conversations at thetakeaway.org/local leaders, including our conversation yesterday with Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot. And coming up this Friday, Amy Walter speaks with Jacksonville, Florida Mayor Lenny Curry.